Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are going to dive into the bounty payments for the cod fisheries of February 1792. However, there's a couple of things I want to kind of cover in a monologue, and it's not really necessarily marketing. It is just some things that I want to bring back around because I think people might be losing focus or at least placing some context. But as you know, the show is sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and this is the only show that actually goes through the academic evidence and gives you the academic evidence-based solutions. We have a comment line, 425-270-5416. 425-270-5416. Now, one of the things we want to do is we want to basically kind of go through this whole, let's just call it the socialist communist movement, political movement, in America. These people that want to be socialists, they want to be communists, and they, you know, want to hold office, they believe they can do socialist communist things. They can't do anything that violates the Constitution. They are held to the process and standard of supporting, protecting, defending, and following the systematic or codified process in the Constitution in invoking their changes. In other words, you want to institute the environmental protection stuff. You want to institute free food, social care, housing, those types of things. If those things are not enumerated within the Constitution, you can't do it. Now, just because they've been getting away with doing it doesn't mean it's legitimate. It's kind of like when we start looking at all of the government that is basically operating today, it's all a house of cards. Almost all of it is a house of cards. There's very few things that are really legitimate that the government is doing. Now, just because somebody's come along and created this covering, okay, so you have a car. And somebody puts a covering on it, like, you know, a sticky wrap that goes around it and makes it look like a rock. Well, it's still a car. It'll drive. There's no real change to that other than how it appears and how you perceive it. It's the same thing with our government. Our government is still a constitutional republic. Even though government may not be operating within those confines of the Constitution, they were never given the authority to go operate any other way. Now, there's a lot of people that are involved in all of these different anti-constitutional things. And to be honest with you, as a U.S. citizen, as a person with the birthright of liberty and a birthright as a citizen, your obligation is to support the Constitution and defend it from enemies, foreign and domestic, which means that all of these operations going on, socialism, communism, or even the sovereign citizens movement, people that are actually taking themselves out of the U.S. citizenry and actually going in a direction where they're not supporting the Constitution, they're basically just trying to protect themselves. Well, it's the same thing with the socialist and communist movement. They're just trying to protect themselves. They're trying to take from you to give to others so that they can redistribute the wealth. I'm here to tell you, both sides are equally wrong. We have an obligation when government is being violated to fix it. We don't have this obligation to just take care of ourselves and let liberty be lost and let the Constitution be lost for our posterity. I look at the Constitution a lot different than most people. I consider it scripture. I consider that it actually it's like the supreme law of governmental scripture that God gave us. Because as we look at the Constitution, it is the supreme law of the land. That's how it was designed, that there could be nothing that really violates it. And this isn't a broad-reaching constitution, granting general powers and giving the government all these different abilities. But the fact of the matter is that we have to support it. And if the powers don't exist, you can't exercise it. I don't care if you made a rap or you created something out of nothing and said, okay, this is what this is. A good case in point is the corporations. A good case in point is Obamacare. It doesn't matter. These things are unconstitutional. The government is complicating it. They're making it worse. And they're making it, well, they want to make it impossible for us to unravel. And I'm here to tell you, it just takes a good little wind, and it's gone. And that's where you come in. We need to start working together to blow down this house of cards. This is what we have to do. Does the Lord want us to take care of our own self-interest? Of course, he clearly wants us to work on our salvation. But when it comes to government and when it comes to the social contract that humanity has, are we to turn our backs and be incompassionate and be callous and indifferent when we see that our liberties, there is nothing more precious than liberty? We're going to read after this, I believe it's Madison's essay on property, and you'll realize how special and how precious your conscience is, your intellectual property, your thoughts, and how we have to guard them religiously. There are more and more facades that we are seeing today. One facade that we're seeing is these fronts of government and or reactions to government that is taking people in the wrong direction. Don't go off and, you know, check out by delisting yourself as a U.S. citizen. A U.S. citizen is a legitimate title and a legitimate position underneath our Constitution. The Constitution created U.S. citizens, citizens of the United States, because they had to protect us from the courts of the world. If you look at the reason why they basically took cognizance over crimes committed on the high seas by U.S. citizens and crimes committed against the laws of nations, this happens to be if you're traveling and the British basically stop your ship and impress you. Basically, they arrest you and they put you into slave service for the British crown, running on their ships or doing whatever it is they're going to force you to do. We had cognizance to at least say we have jurisdiction over those cases to help fight and protect U.S. citizens. That's why they did that. And in essence, as they did that also, they also did this thing called citizenship, visas, passports. Those things are necessary and proper within the powers delegated. But what's not in the powers delegated is this facade to operate housing, this facade to operate and maintain standards of health and human services or energy. I just want you to understand that what we're looking at, we are in a full-blown constitutional crisis, not just because the Biden administration, who is burdening us with debt and tyranny. We are in a constitutional crisis because there's not one state that is having an emergency session to respond to all of these attacks and all of this evil that is being thrust upon us. One of the conversations that has to happen in this next session is an emergency session. They need to be very well addressed and very well attuned to the fact that we need them in 2022, the next session coming up this winter, that they actually have an emergency session. I don't care if they don't have the money for it. Start cutting social services. Government needs to do everything it can to protect its citizens and to protect its sovereignty and all those things that fall underneath their sovereignty and their rule. Anyway, as you know, they have the power, the state legislatures have the power to actually undo everything that the federal government has done to us. So what we're going to do is we're going to kind of set the stage. And one reason why this cod fisheries is so powerful is because, as I said yesterday in our previous episode, that Madison starts using this shock value as he goes through. He basically points out real quick that, you know, these powers don't exist within the Constitution. This is a misconstruction. And he points to the General Welfare and Defense Clause as a preamble, that the listing of powers after the preamble basically, you know, just changes the whole context of what that preamble is all about. It's not about granting general powers. It's about setting a tone so that the following powers could be properly executed and observed. And so on 3 February 1792, the Committee of the Whole of Congress, or the House of Representatives, began considering a bill to encourage cod fisheries, and the Senate had basically passed this bill. So when we get back, we're going to talk about the debates on this bill. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me give you a little bit more background on this. So, as passed by the Senate, the first section of the bill replaced the existing drawback of the import duty on salt. So, at this point in time, there was this tax on the imports of salt for basically curing and preserving. So they weren't necessarily taxing the fish, they were just taxing the salt, so that as it spread around, everybody kind of paid an equal share based on their production. So if you were producing a lot or catching a lot and storing a lot of cod, then you would find that you'd be using more salt, so you'd be paying more. You didn't catch anything today? Well, you didn't have to pay the taxes on salt. Anyway, so what they did was we replaced the existing drawback on the salt to the exporters of salted fish with a new one based on tonnage to owners of the fishing vessels. In other words, now they were, instead of just basically going after the salt, taxing the salt, what they wanted to do was kind of tax the fishing vessels. And so they created this debate in 1792, in February, and it was centered on the advantage which the bill bestowed on New England and stressed the importance of the fisheries as a source of trained sailors in case of war. So this is how they were justifying it. Now, Mr. Livermore says this: the bill now under consideration has two important objects in view. The one is to give encouragement to our fishermen and by that encouragement to increase their numbers. The other is to govern those fishermen by certain laws by which they will be kept under due restraint. Both these objects are of great importance to such persons as to choose to employ their capitals in the fishery business. Now, just keep in mind, what are the enumerated powers within the Constitution? Anything like this to encourage, you know, behavior and to restrain behavior? No. Anyway, and I believe it will not be disputed that the business itself is of considerable importance to the United States, in so much as it affords a certain proportion of remittance or exportation of foreign countries and does not impoverish the country, but enriches it by the addition of so much wealth drawn from the sea. It is the object of those gentlemen who favor the bill that the fishermen should have some encouragement not given to them at the expense of the United States, but directed to them out of what was in the former law called a drawback on the duty of salt. The calculation, as I understand it, has been made as nearly as possible to give that drawback not to the merchants who export the fish, but to the fishermen who take it, in order to increase that description of men, without whose assistance it is in vain to expect any benefit from the fisheries. For if the merchants at present engaged in that branch possessed the whole capital of the United States, yet if they cannot get fishermen, they cannot carry on the fishery. This is done by a particular class of men who must not only be expert seamen, but also accustomed to taking the fish and curing it. If these men cannot be held, the capital cannot be employed, and those who undertake the business cannot carry it on or reap any profit from it. Now, we're talking government here. We're not talking about a board of directors of investments. We're talking about government and having very, very short, defined powers, none of which is what this gentleman's talking about. Whilst the drawback, he goes on and says, whilst the drawback is payable only to the merchant who exports the fish, it is impossible to convince the fishermen that they reap from it any advantage whatever. Or if the disconcerting amongst them do perceive any advantage in it, the others are not so clear-sighted, cannot discern it, and are therefore not disposed to undertake the business. It is, however, of considerable importance to the merchants that the fishermen should receive a proper encouragement, even if they were obliged to allow him a bounty out of their own pocket. The government of the fishermen after the engagement in this business is also necessary to be provided for. Otherwise, frequent instances may occur among the class of men quitting one vessel to embark or board another, or if the shipping themselves for a foreign voyage before the expiration of the fishing season. In the latter case, the vessel lies useless on the owner's land, and he, together with the whole expense of the outfit, loses all of his prospects of future gain. The two objects here mentioned are fully provided for in the bill. Still, however, it is objected to, but what is the objection? It is the word bounty, close quote. is twice used in the clause. Let us now see what the advantage will result from striking out this obnoxious bounty. None at all. The bill says it will cease to have, gentlemen, any objection to the bounty ceasing. Since the bounty is to cease by this bill, what advantage in striking it out? The sense will remain the same, and I do not know why we should make a law expressly to strike out the word bounty, but to strike out the bounty itself. It is strange to me that any gentleman, whether he is for giving a great bounty or no bounty at all, should quarrel with this unfortunate word. There is indeed one part of the section which I readily consent to strike, and I believe every other gentleman who is in favor of the bill will consent to likewise, and that is the clause which provides that the bounty be allowed to be paid on every vessel for one season shall not exceed $170. If, when the vote is taken on the section, there does not appear a majority of the House in favor of striking out the whole, we may then move for striking out the proviso, if it be so offensive to any gentleman. If it not be offensive, it may remain. If gentlemen are disputing only because the word bounty is in the bill, they may be perfectly relieved from their uneasiness on that score, for the bill expressly says, quote, that the bounty now allowed upon the exportation of dried fish of the fisheries of the United States shall cease, and in lieu thereof, a different kind of encouragement is to be given. Here is no reason to dispute about a word. If gentlemen are disposed to consent to the principle of the bill that the drawback of the duties on salt shall be commuted for a certain sum to encourage the fishermen, they will vote in favor of the bill. If not, they will vote against it. But it is impossible for me to conceive why any gentleman under heaven should be against it. It is only fixing for the merchants engaged in this branch a clear and equitable ratio for distributing among the fishermen that encouragement which they think necessary in order to attach those people to the business and to prevent them from going to another occupation on land. The bill is an important one and will increase that branch of business, which is very useful to the community. It does not lay a farthing of bounty or duty on other persons than those who immediately concerned in it will serve them and will not injure anybody. Now, we're going to take a quick breather. Catch my breath here. I've got basically 2 minutes. So now Mr. Lawrence is going to get up. Mr. Lawrence is going to make a comment, and this is what he says, because now we kind of understand that there's some nuances and some changes that they want, but bottom line, they're looking to encourage and control a faction of labor and market space by the U.S. government. Mr. Lawrence said, from examining the section, he conceived it contemplated no more than what the merchant is entitled to by existing laws. The merchant is now entitled to the drawback, but it is found by experience that the effect has been to produce that encouragement to the fisherman which was expected, and he presumed the way was perfectly clear to give a new direction to the drawback, and this is all that is aimed at this in this bill. He supposed that the clause had no necessary connection with the question which had been started respecting the right of government to grant bounties. But since the question has been brought forward, it may be proper to consider it. In discussing the question, he inquired, what has Congress already done? Have we not laid duties on various articles expressly for the purpose of encouraging various branches of our own manufacture? These duties are bounties to all intent and purposes and are founded on the idea only of their conducing to the general interest. Similar objections to those now advanced were not made to these duties. They were advocated, some of them, by gentlemen from the southward. He traced the effects of these duties and showed that they operated fully as indirect bounties. Mr. Lawrence then goes on and says, then advertently particular to the Constitution, and observed that it contains general principles and powers, See what he just said. Mr. Lawrence then adverted particularly to the Constitution and observed that it contains general principles and powers only. General principles and powers. These powers depend on particular laws for their operation, and on this idea, he contended that the powers of the government must, in various circumstances, extend to the granting bounties. He instanced, in other words, well, we're going into a break. We'll pick it up from he instanced when we came back. You know, when you're reading along and all of a sudden that word is not what we would normally say, and it becomes a little roadblock. So when we come back, we will be picking it up from he instanced, and we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so he, Mr. Lawrence, instanced, he asserted, in case of war with a foreign power, will any gentleman say that the general government has not a power to grant a bounty on arms, ammunitions, and etc.? Should the general welfare require it? The general welfare is inseparably connected with an object or pursuit within its effect adds to the riches of the country. He conceived that the argument was given up by gentlemen in opposition to the bill when they admit of encouragement to the fishermen in any possible modification of it. He then adverted particularly to the fishery, stated the number of men employed, the tons of shipping necessary to export the fish taken, and inferred the sound policy of encouraging so important a branch of business, which, unbeknownst to me, is not an enumerated power. Gentlemen say that we do not want a navy. Granted, the Constitution, I'm injecting here, the Constitution requires that we have a navy. Gentlemen say that we do not want a navy, granted, but can they say that we shall never have a war with any European power? May not the time arrive when the protection to the commerce of this country derived from this may be of the utmost necessity to its existence? adverting to Mr. Williamson's objection from the unequal operation of bounties, and who had referred to the Articles of the Constitution, which says that taxes shall be equal in all the states. Mr. Lawrence observed that this article in the Constitution could only respect the rates of the duties, and that the same duties should be paid in Virginia that are paid in New York. At the northward, as at the southward, it surely could not mean that every individual should pay exactly the same sum in every part of the Union. It was a provision that no law could possibly contemplate. He concluded by a summary recapitulation of his arguments, and saying he hoped the section would be retained. Now, Mr. Madison stands up, and now all of a sudden, things are going to change. Mr. Madison says this: "In the conflict I feel between my disposition on one hand to afford every constitutional encouragement to the fisheries, and my dislike on the other hand of the consequences apprehended from clauses in the bill. I should have forborne to enter into this discussion if I had not that over and above such arguments as appear to be natural and pertinent to the subject, others have been introduced which are, in my judgment, contrary to the true meaning and even strike at the characteristic principles of the Constitution. Let me premise, however, to the remarks which I shall briefly offer on the doctrine maintained by these gentlemen, that I make a material distinction in the present case between an allowance as a mere commutation and modification of a drawback, and an allowance in the nature of real and positive bounty. I make a distinction also, as a subject of fair consideration at least, between a bounty granted under the particular terms in the Constitution, quote, a power to regulate trade, close quote, and one granted under the indefinite terms which have been cited as the authority of this occasion. I think, however, that the term bounty is in every point of view improper as it is applied here, not only because it may be offensive to some and, in the opinion of others, carries a dangerous implication, but also because it does not express the true intention of the bill as avowed and advocated by its patrons themselves. For if, in the allowance, nothing more is proposed than a mere reimbursement of a sum advanced, it is only paying a debt, and when we pay a debt, we ought not to claim the merit of granting a bounty. It is supposed by some gentlemen that Congress have authority not only to grant bounties in the sense here used, merely as a commutation of drawbacks, but even to grant them under a power by virtue of which they may do anything which they may think conducive to the general welfare. This, sir, in my mind, raises the important and fundamental question whether the general terms which had been cited are to be considered as a sort of captation or general description of the specified powers, and as to having no further meaning and giving no further power than what is found in that specification, or as an abstract and indefinite delegation of power extending to all cases whatever, to all such at least as we admit the application of money, which is giving as much latitude as any government could well desire." Now, take a deep breath, and Mr. Madison continues, and this is a good backhand here. "I, sir, have always conceived, I believe those who proposed the Constitution conceived, it is still more fully known and more material to observe, those who ratified the Constitution conceived." Now, so I'm going to stop right there and kind of break down these three paradigms. Madison himself conceived. He had this paradigm of what the Constitution and how this all meant. And then he says, I believe those who proposed the Constitution, the framers at the Constitutional Convention, the way they worked it out and the reason why they proposed it, the way it was proposed or written to the states, so that they say, please, you know, we think this is a better government. Well, so they had this paradigm. Madison kind of had this paradigm going in on this Constitution, and he still has this paradigm. There is the framers and going in what they were expecting to create, because you got to understand, now that the Constitution has been signed and is now operating into its second year or third year now of operations, there are still some of those that go, you know what, in the delegation of the convention, we, you know, argued, and this is what this meant, and this is what this meant, and they still kind of clung to their paradigms. But this is the interesting thing. Madison actually takes the focus and shifts it to the legal thing, because he says, and more material to it. Well, let me start off at the beginning of this. It is still more fully known and more material to observe those who ratified the Constitution conceived. So in other words, those who ratified it, those who were told what it meant and why they were told that, so that they would accept the Constitution, that this is not an indefinite government deriving its powers from the general terms prefixed to the specified powers, but a limited government tied down to the specified powers which explain and define the general terms. See? Now, he could have just said, I see it this way, but he didn't. He said, well, I see it this way, and I believe that my brethren who were at the Constitutional Convention, we kind of saw it this way, but more importantly, during the ratification, how it was projected, that perception was that this was a limited government tied down to the specified powers which explain and define the general terms. Now, Madison goes on and says, the gentlemen who contend for a contrary doctrine are surely not aware of the consequences which flow from it, and which they must either admit or give up their doctrine. Now, that's a pretty powerful point right here, because right now he's basically saying those people who are kind of promoting this concept of these bounties and so forth, they are going to create consequences. And Madison's going to lay this out. And this is where he uses what I'll say is shock value. You know, where, you know, some DJ, radio guy, if you remember, who was it? Orson Welles? Was it Orson Welles who did the Day the Earth Stood Still kind of thing on radio? Basically, we were being invaded by, you know, people from space, and there were people that actually killed themselves in response to his shock of, you know, this terrible thing that was happening. Now, did he commit a crime? Well, that's neither here nor there. But the fact is that there are people who have to be shaken up for it to penetrate. As a matter of fact, as some people have told me, I need to be belted and belted and belted with the truth for me to, you know, understand. At least that's what they tell me. But I think that what they're missing is that they're not necessarily always dishing the truth. They're missing parts of it. And then they, you know, think that they've handed me the truth, and, well, that's up for debate. But anyway, fact of the matter is, here is when Madison really goes into what I'll call shock value to help educate those in the room to understand this Constitution, its hard limitations, why it's limited, and the consequences of trying to start meandering outside those boundaries and protections that were written into the Constitution. Okay, so what we'll do is we'll cover this when we come back from break. And we should have enough time to do that, and probably enough time for me to editorialize. But this is the big part coming up. because Madison really wants to impress and he wants to go to their core. What would create fear in the core of these people? We'll be right back after this.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so let's just dive into this. And so this is what he says. It will follow in the first place that if the terms be taken in the broad sense, they maintain the particular powers of four afterwards so carefully and distinctly enumerated would be without meaning and must go for nothing. In other words, he's talking about the preamble, you know, the General Welfare and Defense Clause, the General Defense and Welfare Clause, the very front end of Article 1, Section 8. That's the preamble. And then they start listing what those powers are. It would be absurd to say, this is Madison again, it would be absurd to say, first, that Congress may do what they please, and then that they may do this or that particular thing. After giving Congress power to raise money and apply to all purposes which they may pronounce necessary to the general welfare, it would be absurd to say that the least to superadd a power to raise armies, to provide fleets, and etc. In fact, the meaning of the general terms in question must either be sought in the subsequent enumerations, which limits and details them, or they convert the government from one limited, as hitherto supposed and told during the ratification debates, I'm adding that, to the enumerated powers into a government without any limits at all. It is to be recollected that the terms, quote, common defense and general welfare, close quote, as here used, are not novel terms first introduced into this Constitution. They are terms familiar in their construction and well known to the people. See, we have forgotten this. This is why we have to constantly look and say, hey, this wasn't just an outlier that this Constitution used these words. Look at the Articles of Confederation. They are repeatedly found in the old Articles of Confederation, where although they are susceptible of as great latitude as can be given by them by the context here, it was never supposed or pretended that they conveyed any such powers as is now assigned to them. On the contrary, it was always considered and clear and certain that the old Congress was limited to the enumerated powers and that the enumeration limited and explained the general terms. I asked the gentlemen themselves whether it ever was supposed or suspected that the old Congress could give away the money of the states in bounties to encourage agriculture or for any other purpose they pleased. If such a power had been possessed by that body, it would have been much less impotent or have borne a very different character from that universally ascribed to it. The novel idea now annexed to those terms and never before entertained by the friends or enemies of the government will have a further consequence, which cannot have been taken into the view of the gentlemen. Their construction would only give Congress the complete legislative power I have stated. It would do more. It would supersede all restrictions understood at the present to lie on their power with respect to a judiciary. In other words, now they can do anything and basically make the SCOTUS and the judiciary branch absolutely useless. It would put in the power of Congress to establish courts throughout the United States with cognizance of suits between citizens and citizens, and in all cases throughout the United States with the cognizance in all cases whatsoever. This, sir, seems to be demonstrable, for if the clause in question really authorizes Congress to do whatever they think fit, provided for the general welfare of which they are to judge, and money can be applied to it, Congress must have the power to create and support a judiciary establishment with a jurisdiction extending to all cases favorable in their opinion to the general welfare, in the same manner as they have power to pass laws and apply money providing to any other way for the general welfare. I shall be reminded, perhaps, that according to the terms of the Constitution, the judicial powers is to extend to certain cases only, not to all cases. But the circumstance can have no effect in the argument if being presupposed by the gentleman that the specification of certain objects does not limit the import of the general terms. Taking these terms as an abstract and indefinite grant power, they compromise all the objects of legislative regulation, as well as fall under the judiciary article in the Constitution, as those falling immediately under the legislative article. And if the particular enumeration of objects in the legislative article does not, as these gentlemen contend, limit the general power, neither will it be limited by the partial enumeration of objects in the judicial article. There are consequences, sir, still more extensive, which they follow clearly from the doctrine combated, must be either admitted or the doctrine must be given up. Now, this is where he really starts using his backhand. If Congress can apply money indefinitely to the general welfare and are the sole and supreme judges of the general welfare, they may take the care of religion into their own hands. Pow! They may establish teachers in every state, county, and parish and pay them out of the public treasury. Pow! They may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing in like manner schools throughout the Union. Pow! They may assume the provision for the poor. They may undertake the regulation of roads and other post roads. Pow, pow, pow. In short, everything from the highest object of the state legislation down to the most minute object of police would be thrown under the power of Congress, for every object I have mentioned would admit that the application of money and might be called, if Congress pleased, provisions for the general welfare. The language held in various discussions in this House is a proof that the doctrine in question was never entertained by this body. Arguments, wherever the subject would permit, have constantly been drawn from the peculiar nature of this government, limited to certain enumerated powers, instead of extending, like other governments, to all cases not particularly excepted. In a very late instance, I mean the debate on the representation bill, it must be remembered that the argument much used, particularly by a gentleman from Massachusetts against the ratio of 1 for 30,000, was that this government was unlike the state governments, which had an indefinite variety of objects within their power, that it had a smaller number of objects only to attend, and therefore that a smaller number of representatives would be sufficient to administer it. Arguments have been advanced to show that because in the regulations of trade, indirect and eventual encouragement is given to manufacturers, therefore Congress have power to give money in direct bounties or to grant it in another way that would answer the same purpose. But surely, sir, there is a great obvious difference which it cannot be necessary to enlarge upon. A duty laid on important implements of husbandry would in its operation be an indirect tax on exported produce. But will anyone say that by virtue of mere power to lay duties on imports, Congress may go directly to produce or implements of agriculture or the articles exported? It is true, duties on exports are expressly prohibited. But if you start looking at this, you can see how we're really messing up our economy and the way we're taxing ourselves. But if there are no articles forbidding them, a power directly to tax exports could never be deduced from a power to tax imports, although such a power might indirectly and incidentally affect exports. In short, sir, without going further into the subject, which I should not have touched on at all, but for the reasons already mentioned, I venture to declare it is my opinion that were the power of Congress to establish in the latitude contended for, it would subvert the very foundation and transmute the very nature of the limited government established by the people of America. And what inferences might be drawn or what consequences ensue from such a step, it is incumbent on us as well to consider. With respect to the question for the House for striking out the clause, it is immaterial whether it be struck out or so amended as to rest on the avowed principle of commutation of the drawback, but as a clause has been drawn up by one of my colleagues in order to be substituted, I shall concur in a vote for striking out, reserving to myself a freedom to be governed in my final vote by the modification which may prevail. And so he kind of just lays out what he's going to do into the, you know, the details of the bill. But bottom line, my friends, here he is basically talking about the hard enumerated powers that when you start looking, it was clearly articulated in the ratification debates. We already went through this, that no general power. So if somebody says, well, I read that as a general power, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how you read it. When you look at how it was defined and the terms of that clause was defined in the ratification debates, it was defined as not a general power. That is the legal standing for that clause. This is why we need to have the Constitution Party become the center point for hosting what I believe is the canonizing of the Constitution. We need to boil this down, my friends, so that everybody understands what does the Constitution really mean? What do these lines really mean? We already know because it's in the ratification debates. At least you know because you've been listening. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue.
Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.